kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
All right. Great time for my throat to get all gunky, huh?
Well, that makes for a story. Like, well, you might be wondering why I'm talking like this. Well,
I sucked a lot of dicks today.
That's what they get you like in the real world.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Another reviews-heavy episode today, so let's just kick things off with our good friend, Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, sir. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. Like, I'm not even fucking around with the intro to this show. I'm just like, people, let's talk.
Like, Zam on it. Like, it's a day. We got a show. You know what this is all about.
Like, shit's going down. You're here to listen to some reviews, and we're here to give you some reviews.
What's not to like, I say? What's not to like?
Ain't no dicking around, as the kids say.
Well, some kids say that. The other ones are like, there's plenty of dicking around.
So, how have you been? How's your week going?
It's been tumultuous, but I'm getting through it. I had to replace a washing machine unexpectedly.
So, that's never fun.
No, it is not. It's like, hey, that money you were sitting on, well, spend it on this. It's like, I don't want to do that.
But I want to buy candy instead.
Yeah, I want to sit on this damn money. What if a game comes that I want? Or, I don't know, I want to spend it on other potential bills I got looming in the horizon. But at the same time, I'm also just happy that I had the funds on hand to replace the machine, because having no washing machine is a horrible situation to find yourself in. So, I don't want to go back to that. So, how about yourself, though?
You know, one of those weeks.
Oh, yeah. That I do know.
Just that hectic, crazy. It seems this show gets crazier and crazier every week. But that's a good thing.
I'm about to say good crazy, I hope.
Yeah. I kind of feel bad that this is like two Monday shows in a row without an interview. So I feel bad for our listeners who are like, oh God, I just have to listen to this dickhead talk for a while.
Sometimes it's all about just learning about what games are on tap too, because let's be honest here, it's not always easy to get industry folks to do an interview. Like, I've been trying to get a person on my show recently, someone I actually know personally, mind you, and it's like, yeah, I'll do it, and then like a month goes by and nothing's been scheduled. Like, are you doing it or aren't you? It's like, sometimes, and I can imagine if you're just trying to talk to them as an industry person, like, per, like, you know, show to industry, like, hey, I run a show, can we interview you? It's like, oh yeah, we just gotta talk to our people and do a thing and a shuffle, and then they forget you exist and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, I think listeners understand. It's a rough time to get industry folks on board sometimes.
Very true. Although the funny thing is, after I have someone on the show, they're like 1,000 times more likely to keep in touch with us afterwards, because they know that not only are we a legit show, but we're stupid as hell. And they can be stupid on our show.
Yeah, that's what's up. If anything, it's almost risky for them. It's like, shit, I got too stupid.
That wasn't approved
by the company. I can't say that. Crap. Could you take that out of the episode? You know, just don't include that. Like, well, we have to, but we'll blur. We'll make like someone else said it. We'll change your name for the episode.
I think I have only ever edited out a joke or a comment one time on this show.
Wow.
Like, actual during the interview, something was said, and afterwards they're like, we probably shouldn't have said that.
No, without saying who it was or anything, like, was the actual thing said just something that, like, an industry secret they weren't supposed to share? Or was it just a personal MacGuffin was like, wow, you can't make those kinds of statements on air?
I want to say it was a Cosby joke.
Oh,
back when like all of that was starting.
Oh, yeah, that's a no-no.
Like, well, like now, like whatever, like everybody knows what Cosby did, but back then it was still kind of like, oh, no, not Dr. Huxtable.
Yeah, it was still wasn't 100%. It wasn't really nailed and confirmed. It was just more like it was the hearsay bit, and people were like, yeah, you can't do that, you know. But now it's like, psh, I was like a diehard believer in the man, and even I got to the point where I was like, oh, God damn it, Jesus, man.
It's hard to defend this guy.
I just stopped. I just stopped. I'm like, look, I like the old show, and I like what he did outside of the diddling. When he got to the, but then he ruined his entire image. He's an awful person, but I can still enjoy what he accomplished that wasn't diddling.
Very true.
He still deserves to also pay for the diddling. It's like, you don't have to, like, it's basically the situation. I think I eventually hit the point where I was like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, the bathwater is ridiculously, grotesquely tainted. But yeah. I still think Rudy Huxtable is adorable, okay? And you can't take that away from me. That's pretty much where I went with it in the end. So
on the bright side, it's not nearly as bad as, say, a wrestling fan like me who grew up, like, fucking idolizing Chris Benoit.
Oh, God. If I remember correctly, he was the murder-suicide guy, right?
The family? Yep.
Yeah, that's some shit. I was like, well... Where does my fandom go from here? It's like, hit to the toilet.
That's killed his wife, killed his son. I believe the kid was autistic.
It's just like, there's no sunny side up to that. None. Heck, there's nothing that you can say there aside from, well, he's messed up and he took others with him. That's the worst way to be messed up. It's like, you can go, if you're not, I said it to somebody before, and I took a lot of flack for it, and this is probably, this might earn me a lot of enemies on the show, I don't know, but it's okay if a person is in a horrible state of affairs mentally. It happens, you know, but there are options to seek help for that, and if you have the wherewithal to do so, you should seek those options. You should try to better yourself. However, if you decide not only to not try to better yourself and decide you want to take others down the road with you to Horror Town, you might want to start with yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's not cool. Like,
oh, I definitely agree.
Yeah, it's like, there's no defending that. There's no, well, he was really depressed. Like, yeah, even depressed people have cognitive understanding of certain aspects of things. Like, you can't just, no. No. So, but that's another story. We got games to talk about.
Indeed. Enough with the Benoits and the Cosbys. Billy Benoit. Let us kick things off with the game Shinus, The Lightning Kingdom, developed by Enigami, published by Focus Home Interactive. It released April 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $29.99. Play as Chato and his companions traveling through the Celestial Islands on their flying ship. After a crash landing on one of the most hostile of the Celestial Islands, you find yourself in the middle of a conflict involving multiple kingdoms. However, this explosive situation might find a peaceful outcome with Chato's newfound unique ability to perceive and communicate with the Shinus, a mysterious spirit imbued with magic. So, Pernell, what did you think of this one?
Well, it's an interesting mix of events with this game, because I'm going to flat out say that I suspected and then later confirmed that, because I had no understanding about this game before you gave it to me, first of all. This game has to have been based on like a manga or a comic book, because when they throw you into the game, I feel like they kind of expected you, the player, to know of all the races in the game and the kingdom names in the game and things of that nature, because there's no primer. Like, I was playing the game, and they would like mention, like, for example, like the main character and his friend Pocky, they are specific, I don't want to say feline, more like a, I guess they're kind of like a feline race, I don't know, but basically characters will just throw it around. They don't say, hey, they just throw the name out there out of willy-nilly, and for a while I didn't even realize they were talking about them. I was like, what the hell is this race? What are they talking about? The Minguax and the Ginkguax. But they do that a lot. And so eventually I just kind of started tuning that stuff out. I took it to a very simple place, which is you and your friend crashed on this planet, and you're trying to find each other initially, and then you meet up with these other people who are escaping from another place, and then you start to kind of click together, and you start trying to help each other out. That's basically where I took it, and I ran with that and made it much easier to digest. And it's starting to become more understandable as I progress and things start to happen. But what I can say is a legit solid point, regardless of how well you interpret the story, is the I think the combat system is really fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically there's a lot of functions that they throw into this game. First of all, it's the battles are one-on-one. Like, you have a party system, but you have it's more like a tag-in and tag-out sort of thing. So I might have Shadow out, and his friend Pocky might want to come in, and I'll have Cayenne also in standby, who's another friend of theirs. So when they're not in battle, they can get support skills that will allow you to do certain things, like maybe change the field's elemental properties or give you a quick heal boost over a period of time. And they also kind of work like Gambits did in Final Fantasy XII, where you determine like when you want to do them. What is the condition in which you want this ability to be done? Like when your health is below a certain point or when the enemy's at a certain point. You know, cool stuff like that. So in addition to that, getting these support abilities, there's also a magic system, which doesn't involve like MP bottles and stuff, so you don't have to carry around MP items. I think there are still some in the game, but what it is you use the earlier mentioned elemental fields to charge up your actual tap count. So let's say you have a skill that lets you throw a rock. It's an earth attack. So you equip the skill, and after you use it a certain number of times, you get to keep it. You don't need the item on anymore in order to use the skill. So you have that, and you'll have, say, like 10 earth element points, and the skill might cost you 3 or 7, rather. It'll cost you like 7 points. So when you have 7 points, you can charge up, you throw the rock, hit the guy, and then you can concentrate while the map's elemental properties earth to build it back up while you're in a fight. So it's kind of cool to just have to balance between concentrating, which is the magic booster, attacking, which is an attack move, which is using your typical punches and kick buttons. Then there are combos, which you can learn through equipping items, which allow you to do, like, it's pretty simple combos. We're not talking like up, up, down, down, or quarter circle punch. We're talking punch button and then the trigger,
yeah,
or two kick buttons and the trigger. And they're already set in stone. Like, the game is already set up in a way where it shows you, as it is, this is a very unique idea for a game. It shows you everything you can get immediately, like, as far as abilities go. So, like, for example, I'm looking at, like, let's say, like Chad, the main character's list, right? And it shows you every wind skill, every earth skill, all the skills he can eventually learn. And when you find the ability, it fills it in. And I kind of like this. I've never played a game that does that before. But what it does is it allows you to try to plan ahead for what your characters are going to eventually be able to start doing. So if you got a guy who you want to build up a certain set of skills, okay, I want to work on these, knowing that he's going to eventually get this ability, this lets him do this. I want him to be the guy buffed up for when that time comes. He's going to be the man that starts taking heads out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but like, I like that idea of the game too. The world map is freaking gorgeous. It's a very beautiful game.
Like, the game in general is just fucking beautiful.
Yes, it is. I only had one issue with map traversal, which is that every once in a blue moon, but I think these days I feel like it's kind of common for like games are like that aren't like beaten over the head through QA. But when you certain areas, like you try to, it's a platforming game. So like a lot of platforming takes place on the world map to get the certain treasure chests or whatever. So you might find yourself trying to traverse a part of the environment that the developers didn't intend for you to do, and you know, perseverance and pushing forward, you're like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to find a way. And then you make that one jump that kind of gets you a little stuck, and your guy's kind of perpetually hopping there, like it's kind of stuck. But I found ways to get out by doing things like maybe switching my main character on the map, and that jostles him and puts him in a place where the game meant for him to be able to stand, so it gets you out. It's just one thing that comes up every once in a blue moon. But aside from that, world traversal is awesome. It's just a beautiful game in general.
Yeah, there's a good sense of exploration in the game. I know you mentioned chucking rocks before, but I enjoyed that you could find secrets by, like, chucking rocks at walls.
Oh, yeah, I did like that a lot. You can chuck rocks at walls. There's also aspects where, like, say, there's, like, different pressure switches you can lay down. So, like, each of the characters has their own world map ability. Like, the main character can create a rock and then lay it down. Second character can, like, you know, connect elemental change to affect the environment and so on and so forth. And this guy, I know he can do like telepathy, but each character has their own world map ability, which you use to solve puzzles. Like you mentioned, you can throw rocks to solve puzzles, and like I saw puzzles, find secret rooms and stuff like that. And I did come to enjoy that aspect of the game too. It's a genuinely good game. It's just, I think the only real hiccup was just getting past that initial wave of like of dialogue, because it just wasn't getting me. It wasn't making me go, I care about these people. Instead, it just made me go, I just want to move on and see who I can punch. I want to beat people up.
Yeah.
But I can definitely see this being a game also as I play more of it, where it's like, okay, I can see them growing on you over time. Because I'm sure you've played RPGs in the past where I was like, okay, I'm not too digging. You know, like, I think Final Fantasy 13 was a huge, you know, victim of that, but the opposite end of the spectrum where it was like, you want to care about the characters, but the gameplay wasn't there at the early parts of the game. And with this game, it's more like the gameplay is there. I just want to get to the point where I care about the characters. And I think that will happen. I think it will happen because they are giving them a little bit more context as you go. So,
yeah, but I have a small little gripe with the game as well. And it's mainly with the camera. The camera feels very floaty and slow when you're trying to move it around. I'm not sure if you felt the same way.
I think it's one of those things where it's like, it might, I can see those things that you say. I just look at it in the sense where, like, at this point in time, I feel like all these games are like this with camera. Like, there's very few games I play where they nail that camera down. It's more like, eh, is it serviceable? Okay, I'll work with this thing. Versus some games where it's barely even serviceable and you'll try to move the camera and you get it in the spot you want it to be. And the moment you start moving, it's like, no, now we're going to just reshuffle it again, realign it with where you're running to. And that means you didn't do anything. It just, it didn't work. So, but at least with this game, yeah, it is a little slow and it has like, it's got a weird curve there to it. But if you want to stay focused on an environment and then run up towards it, it doesn't realign itself for the most part.
Yeah, true.
And I can appreciate that. It stays just where you left it. Which goes to, that's actually is kind of a good testament to the way they designed the world too, because that means that they didn't create, I mean, unless maybe I just haven't noticed it, but it's like, it means that they didn't create any scenarios where it's like, okay, we need to have this exact camera angle at all times we enter this room, and as a result, we won't allow you to manipulate the camera in a usable fashion. So, like, they definitely didn't do that with this game, which I can definitely appreciate.
Yeah. I agree. Overall, I think it's an awesome, awesome game. It's nice that there's an RPG out that isn't like a 75-hour epic, and it's just an enjoyable length that you could get through. It's manageable.
I agree. Like, I was talking to a friend about this yesterday, believe it or not. It wasn't about this game. It was about a game called Crimson Shroud on the 3DS. Mm. It is a downloadable game. It was by, I think it was the guy who did, like, Vagrant Story or something. All I remember is he was a very notable guy. Like, he's known in the industry. And my friend was, like, saying the same thing. He's like, you should try it, Pernell, when you get a chance, because unlike these bigwig games, it's actually designed to be beaten in, like, 5 hours. Like, a five-hour role-playing game? That seems unheard of to me. And yet, at the same time, I'm intrigued and want to try this title. You know? It sounds like a good title. It sounds like it'd be a good thing to do, because if you could pull it off, that means, like, imagine a game, if someone designed it, where it's an RPG composed of multiple RPGs, all short stories, and you can beat them all within 5 to 10 hours.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. It's like a bunch of books. If you're listening, developers, you just got a baller of an idea. Just hand it to you. Do that. You can make a 40-hour game composed of 4 10-hour games. It's
ingenious. That would be cool. Instead of just a 100-hour game, just 10 games that combine to 100 hours, but in one package.
And hell, if they don't want to design like 4 to 10 different worlds, they can be stories that all take place in the same world. You don't have to go to all the same places. And what that also means is that if you wanted to have like some kind of in-game powwow deal, you could just say, okay, at the end, if you really want to play that much and play through all the stories, they all can come together to fight like one dungeon or two dungeons, and then you can kind of
bonus chapter. Oh my god!
Yeah, it's like it's such an ingenious idea, and no one does it. No one does it. It's like, come on, people, we got to make this happen. You know, people have time constraints, but they also want to feel like they completed something, and they didn't just stop 25 hours into the adventure. It's like, well, I'm like a quarter of the way through the game. And I forgot what happened because my life kicked in and I couldn't play for 2 months or a month. You know, like, no,
Yeah, we don't all have time for that stuff anymore. And that's one of the things I love about Shinus, is that if you don't have the time for a 100-hour epic, you could still enjoy this game, and you could still get into this game and get through most, if not all of it. You know, take care of a lot of exploring. There's plenty to do, so it's not a short game, but it's not overly unnecessarily long.
Well, I can dig that wholeheartedly. I'm thinking it's probably no more than like 20 hours. No more. So that's, to me, is perfect. That's perfect.
True. You know? And I do think that for the length, the price might be a bit of a turnoff for some, but for $30, I still think it's worth it, and I would give the game a recommended try it.
See, for me, I think it changes as you get older, because what it is, remember when we were kids and like they would announce, say, Final Fantasy VII, I don't know, and they always had the bullet in the corner, was like 100-hour epic game, 40 hours of world traversing gameplay, and you're like, oh boy, that's like an hour of gameplay for like a dollar. This is awesome, right? But now it's not so much that, because your time is at a premium and you want to play multiple things. You don't want to be invested in one game forever if you can help it. So the idea then becomes quality hours. Is it 10 quality hours? Because if those hours are all quality, I want them, and I'm fine with that. 10 quality hours for $30, that's a deal. You spend $16 to go to the movies for an hour and a half to 2 hours. I mean, I think that's fine. And I think that just kind of came with age. So I'm definitely on the try it ball too. And it's teetering towards buy. So,
and that's why I say a recommended try it. It's, yeah, you gotta have the shades of gray in there.
Yeah, because like I said, the only thing that hit me was like some of the world explanation stuff and not having it really quite grab me. But if you're enjoying the game and you're having fun regardless of whether how much you understand the world, then I think it still did a good job. It brought you in. It made you enjoy what it did, what it created. So a lot of RPGs wish they could do that.
Indeed. So, yeah, good stuff. I have a quick email review to take care of, if you don't mind. Listen.
Punk. Hey, you.
The next game to talk about is called Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality. And the fact that this is email, it makes me sad because I would have loved to play this myself. Developed by Alchemy Labs, published by Adult Swim Games, it released April 20th on Steam for HTC Vive and Oculus Rift for $29.99. Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality smashes together the absolute VR chaos of the award-winning job simulator with the ridiculous all-out take-no-prisoners comedy of Rick and Morty. It's been a while since we've heard from him, but our good friend Uneaten Lake wrote in this one, so let us get to it. He says, I struggled a bit with writing a review for this game. It's like trying to tell someone to watch a comedy special without giving details on all the funny stuff you heard. You don't want to ruin the experience for those who want to check it out by telling them the funny stuff that you found funny. Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality puts you in the shoes of a virtual Morty that Rick creates in order to help him out with a few things. Okay, well, you're not really in anyone's shoes since you're just a head and hands. Most of the game has you doing things inside Rick's laboratory, basically the garage from the TV show. The garage has a ton of items from the show in it that you can interact with. It contains a few puzzles that were enjoyable and never too hard to figure out. I lost myself in one of the puzzles that has you fixing Rick's ship. I was sitting on the floor of the garage and my house, picking up these little pieces and reading the directions for the puzzle. I totally forgot I was playing a game and was completely immersed in the game and what I was doing. Which, that's the sign of a good VR game to me.
It sounds like it. Like, I wouldn't have expected him to actually say, I was sitting on the floor, literally, reading a manual and enjoying myself. He's like
just playing the game.
Yeah, like I wouldn't have expected that, because like, I mean, I'm still not too into the VR scene yet, because I'm waiting for it to be a solid hit before I'm like, okay, time to invest in the platform, because we've all been there where we jump on new tech when it becomes new, and then the person who creates it goes, well, we're done producing products for this, you just wasted your money, chump.
That's like, pretty much everything Sony does.
Yeah, exactly. So when PSVR got announced, people were like, are you getting? I was like, nope. I happened with the PSP. They gotten with the Vita. They pretty much gotten with the Eye. They're not getting me again. Screw that. So if VR works for like another year or so, then maybe I'll look at getting it on a discount or something. But if it dies, I'll be able to say, finally, I didn't blow my money as an early adopter. Bite me. You know, and I'm content with it. So, and VR was also kind of, you know, highly suspect too, because call me a chump if you want, but I still had Shades of the Virtual Boy in my head when people were like, hey, we're going to try that VR thing again. And like, it's been attempted before. And until we reach that point where we're actually able to move around a room and interact with the world, I'm not as hopped up on it, on the idea of doing it, you know? So, but give it some time, let them eke out the details, and heaven forbid not throw it away because it just didn't immediately take off. Then, hey, yeah, I'll come in and check it out.
Oh, man. Anyway, his email goes on. The only gameplay issue I had was figuring out that one of the puzzles needed a Meeseeks in order to finish it. In the game, Meeseeks are basically a clone of yourself. When you move, the Meeseeks move as well. If you can pick an object up, so can the Meeseeks. You'll find at times that you'll need a Meeseeks in order to pass an object from one area of the garage to the next without it hitting the floor. Other than that, most people should be able to finish the game in about an hour or two. You'll then be able to go back and play some of the mini-games and or open up a free-roam game in order to find some of the tapes that you can play on the tape recorder. I only found 2 of the 13 tapes myself, but they were pretty funny to listen to. I need to go back and find the rest to see what is on them. The game was developed by Alchemy Labs, which created Job Simulator. You'll see a lot of Job Sim in Rick and Morty that you'll be tasked with doing random things with objects laying around in the play area. The game is also written by Justin Roiland, the creator of Rick and Morty, and the founder of Squanchtendo. I don't know why I have
Squanchtendo.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
I bring up Justin and Squanchtendo because they created one of my favorite VR games, Accounting VR. Rick and Morty VR is a perfect mashup of Job Sim and Accounting VR. Job Sim equals family-friendly VR game. Rick and Morty Virtual Reality equals a little more adult version of Job Sim. Accounting VR equals really adult experience, but one that should be had. I have a feeling that because of the language and shortness of Accounting VR, the only place you could play it is on the PC and Vive. This sucks because I know Joe would fucking love it. So maybe one day it'll come to PlayStation VR.
That would be nice because you can give it a shot.
So I had fun with Rick and Morty Virtual Reality. Fans of the Rick and Morty show will enjoy it as well. The price is a little steep, though, for the amount of content in it, so I'm going to have to split up the recommendation. If you're a Rick and Morty fan, it's a must-buy. If the price is a little too steep, then you might want to wait until a sale, but still buy it. If you're not a fan of Rick and Morty, but like Job Simulator types of games, then you might want to try it at its current price and buy it on sale. If you're a super fan of Justin Roiland's type of humor, you must go download Accounting VR and experience it. It's free on Steam. Go do this immediately. If you enjoyed Accounting VR and like Job Simulator, then you're going to like Rick and Morty Virtual Reality. So go buy it. One last thing, if you've got the time, go watch Justin Roiland's VR LA 2017 keynote address. It's pretty funny.
Keynote address. Nice. Jeez, this guy just recommended stuff out the wazoo, isn't he?
Indeed. So I'm probably going to have to watch that keynote speech later on.
Sounds like me. I'm genuinely curious about it now.
I'll probably throw that in the comments section, the write-up of the episode. So go look down there for the link to it. And I'm sure it's going to be funnier than this show. So,
Well, that's, admittedly, it's freaking just it's Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland. So, yeah, it will be. Nothing against us. That's just how it is.
I really hope Rick and Morty Virtual Reality comes to PlayStation VR. I know Job Simulator eventually made the jump, so hopefully this one will as well.
That's good. That means the odds are there, especially because your Job Simulator came over and Rick and Morty's pretty much like a gold mine property these days.
So. Yeah. Fucking Szechuan sauce.
God. I had forgotten that even existed until they brought it up on the show, and I was like, oh, I want it. I genuinely want it too. Like, so at that point, McDonald's should have just been like, yeah, we can do that. Strike while the iron's hot. Just like release it like a month from now, and they're like, hey, you know, Rick and Morty wanted it, so why not? But then again, maybe they might not want to because they'll feel like maybe other companies will start doing the same thing. Like, well, we want a thing to come back too, so let's just produce our show. But, I don't know. I feel like also that Rick and Morty is kind of very unique in that regard. I don't think too many other shows can pull that off. So
yeah, pretty much. But anyway, we got one more game to talk about with you, and that is called Riptail. Developed and published by Supergod, it released April 27th on Steam for $5.99. Riptail is a 2D action game aiming to make sword combat be as bloody and impactful as possible. The player collects gems that allow them to execute different attacks in the order of their choosing. All this results in a symphony of combos that fill the screen with blood and guts. This sounds like a happy family-friendly game, so Pernell, what did you think of this one?
Well, the first question I want to ask, though you might not know this, is Supergod the same developer that made a game called Downwell?
Now it looks like their only game on Steam is Riptail.
Wow, that is weird, because this game is so much like the game Downwell that it's ridiculous. Though this is not a bad thing, mind you. So the game, the idea behind the game is you start out, there's a story involved. I didn't care about it because this isn't that kind of game. This is a game about action and just getting shit done. So you start out, you're on the surface, and it tells you just simple things like how to run and how to jump. And then you can go through either the tutorial, which explains how the combat works, or you can dive into the hole and begin your adventure. And combat is an interesting deal because what it is you start out with three gems. You always have a max of three gems unless something changes. I haven't gotten that far because I sucked at the game. But so you get three gems, and they each are attributed to a specific attack. In this case, the straight slash. You push the button, one gem gets exhausted, and you do a straight dash in the direction that you were pressing on the controller, and you attack a guy if he's in that direction. You can combo all three off and go one, then point to another guy, two, and point to another guy, go three, and get three slashes in and just start mucking heads up. And those gems themselves regenerate on their own over time.
Mm.
Overall, the game's progression involves you going down, down, down. You might occasionally go left to right, but for the most part, you're just going as far down as you possibly can. Each room involves a new set of enemies that are randomly generated and a room layout that is also randomly generated based on the map that you are on. You can also find money in either enemy drops or in vases or boxes that you break, which can then be taken to the random shops that you can find in the maps, which lets you buy gems that imbue you with different attacks. So you can say swap out one straight slash gem for a saw slash gem, which allows you to slash in like a saw motion instead, or a triple slash and things like that. So your overall goal is just get as far down as you can. Every once in a while, you may also come across a challenge room where a guy will ask you to perform a task, and if you can pull it off, you might get like a trinket, which I have no idea what they freaking do. They're just things that show up on the menu, or you might get like, maybe something that leads to an unlock, like a new scarf or a new pet. And essentially, every once in a while, you come across a boss, which I've only beaten one of the bosses, which ended up being a pair of fireball-throwing women. But I beat them. The other boss I fought, which was like a giant dragon, kicked the living snot out of me. Multiple times he beat me. So, but this game, I think, is a lot of fun. Because, again, it immediately channeled the game Downwell, which was also a cheap game release. It's also in black and white. And it also involves you constantly going down and finding money and occasionally stumbling across a shop, which allows you to buy attack editing items. But this game took that premise and expanded on it by giving you more abilities that you can customize. It's not just like you got it, you have it. This game lets you do customization of your abilities. It has boss fights in it. And it seems like you get, there's like, depending on, I'm not sure what the algorithm is that determines it, but when you start the game up, you'll be in a different environment. Like you might be in the fungi grotto, or you might be in the crypts, you know? And as a result, that determines the monsters you fight during your game session. It determines the types of stuff you'll find in the rooms, all those things. So it added a little bit more that Downwell did not have, which is why I really thought it was by that developer, because it seems like they took that product and really enhanced it and made it better.
And then there's gallons of blood as well.
Yeah, the blood is not so bad. It's primarily because of the way the game is designed. It's black and white, with the exception of the blood.
Yeah.
Or if you unlock a scarf that's a different color, the scarf will be a different color. So what ends up happening is you kill a guy, you must like a dribble of blood, like it'll hit the wall and it'll be all over here. But it's like not offensive blood. It's not like grotesque blood. It's cartoon blood. And it's fun blood. If anything, it just it adds color to a black and white environment. So I kind of like that. The only thing I didn't like about the game, though this isn't even a bad thing, it's just more of a, Pernell, you're so annoyed by this, is that when you smash pots early on in the game, when you don't know what's going on, I was thinking that I was picking up shards from the pots because they would hit the ground, but they really were just shards from the pot. Like, they did nothing for you. It was just artistic imbuement that the developer decided to do. And I'm like, smash all these pots, I'm getting stuff. The reality is I'm not getting squat from them. It was just every once in a while you might find a heart or you might find a coin. Other than that, I was just smashing for smashing's sake. And I also have no idea what the counter, what the combo meter does. I never figured out what that does. Which the combo meter being when you kill a certain number, you kill guys in sequence, I guess without getting hit, and while still going through the same gym meter, you get combo boosting. But I don't know what that does. It was just stylish for me. I'm like, hey, 5 combo, I'm good with that. Didn't know what it did though. So, but even with those things aside, for $5.99, this game is a definite buy, and it'd be even more. Well, correction, it's a buy if you're okay, if you're looking for a quick hit session on your Steam account. Though I want to say it would for me, it'd have been a definite buy if it was on a portable. Get this game on a Switch or a Vita or a 3DS, man, because this is definitely a great pickup and play title. So you know what? It's still a freaking recommended buy, regardless. It's just, it fits better on a handheld pick-up-and-play scenario instead of something you have to boot up and then turn off, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's possible that the game might take off like Downwell did and show up on other platforms, because I know Downwell is available on PS4 and Vita.
Yeah, and that's where I played Downwell at, was on the Vita. And it is definitely legit. Like, so if this game got on there, I'd buy. I mean, I got it from you as a review copy. If it hit Vita, I'd buy it again.
And while you were talking, I actually just bought Riptail on Steam.
Well, there you go. See, that's a recommendation that sells copies.
That's how good the review was, and how interesting you made the game sound. That I legitimately just bought Riptail on Steam, and it is on sale until May 4th for $5.39 instead of $5.99. So save that 10%, save your 60 cents, and go grab it on sale.
You can get a fictional Szechuan sauce with that money.
Pernell, it's always good having you on, and thank you so much for hanging out for these reviews. Any final words to sum up your visit on this episode?
Just pray for my washing machine delivery, and I guess if you haven't bought Crawl after me recommending it 2 episodes in a row, I don't know what to tell you. You're messing up. And also, I just thanks for having me on. It's fun talking about games with people who like to talk about games.
Hey, and you'll be on Thursday, right?
Yeah, party time.
Awesome. We will talk to you then, Pernell.
All right, man. Until then.
Amen. All right, next game to talk about is called Death State, developed by Bread Machine Games, published by Black Shell Media, released April 25th on PS4 for $14.99, previously available on Steam, and an Xbox release is planned for sometime later on this year. Death State is a roguelike bullet hell adventure set in a bizarre world of dimensional exploration. Plays a number of unique characters trying to discover the fate of Professor Einberg, who opened a portal to the void. Are you ready to venture deep into the abyss? We called in one of our good friends. Welcome back to the show. It's been quite a while. Ian Davis, how are you doing?
Howdy, Joe. Howdy, everybody. I'm okay. It has been a while, but I'm good. I'm ready to talk about some games. This game specifically, Death State.
What have you been up to since you haven't been on the show?
Well, I've been petting cats and posting terrible memes on Facebook and playing a lot of video games. I took care of the Dark Souls 3 DLC that came out.
Nice.
I just finished at least the story part of the Final Fantasy 15 DLC, the first one.
Nice.
Episode Gladiolus. Yeah. It was a good time.
And then and then you just played Death State too, huh?
I did. Yeah. No, I've been playing a bit of that this week. It's quite fun.
So I'm curious to know, were you ready to venture deep into the abyss?
Oh, gosh, always. You know me. I'm always about venturing into the abyss. That's one of the things about Dark Souls. But in Death State, it's a lot different. Because, you know, you don't physically go there. It's just in the game, I guess they hook your body up to some machine. The title of the game is Death State. So you're entering the Death State, which is inside of you. It's not some external thing, but this, it's fun. Lots of demons, lots of abyss.
So explain, what is this game?
This game, it's a roguelike, bullet hell, dungeon crawling shooter game full of lots of items. You collect guts and books and swords, and you fight bunches of crazy bosses. It's kind of hard. I played Enter the Gungeon and things like that, but I didn't think that it would be as brutal.
Yeah, because they, not only is it the roguelike exploration, but they throw in not just people shooting at you, but full-on bullet hell elements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are bullets all over the screen. I mean, if you play on normal, then it's relatively tame until you get to about the third level, and then everything shoots bullets. But in the first couple of levels, it's only a few different enemy types that do. So it's, you know, so you've got some time to build up some strategy. That's your goal when you start the game anyway, from the beginning, the first level is you try to equip yourself with as much as you can to deal with all the bullets around you.
Mm.
And then you just have to dive in.
So it tries to ease you in.
It does try to ease you in just a bit. There are some shrines that you can find after you die or beat the first boss that can also increase the difficulty. So you've got like three different ways to do it, I think. I don't know if there's a difficulty option in the menu, but I know that you can change one of the settings outside when you go into the dungeon from like normal to insanity.
Mm.
That's the first level of difficulty. The second level of difficulty is desecration. So you go in and you find this pedestal with a skull on it, and you click it, and then a boss shows up. And after that, you can find more of those pedestals as you go through the levels, and that will also increase the difficulty. And I think there are achievements and things tied to that, but I haven't gotten quite far enough to find all of those yet.
All right.
So it's brutal, but it's fun. It's worth it. I mean, I didn't think that after an hour I would still be wanting to go back, but it was just like, no, I have to keep trying to do this. So what I've been doing is just slowly chipping away at it bit by bit. I'll get one level down and then I'll die. I'll get two levels down and then I'll die. I'll get the third level down, I'll die. And that's as far as I can get so far. I've been to maybe five different worlds, but the third level, technically, whichever one of the worlds that you get to, is about as far as I can get, like layer 11, right before the third boss.
Nice.
Yeah. Ugh. A whole bunch of different collectibles and characters and weapons and all kinds of stuff.
Sounds pretty awesome.
It is. I'm not really too focused on one part of it at the moment, but
I dig the visuals of it. It has a nice pixel art style to it. Bright colors.
that kind of aesthetic thing that people are going for now, the vaporwave
bit with pretty neons and
pretty neons and stuff
mixed with like demons and hell.
yeah there are all kinds of demons. There's bat demons and skeletons and skeleton kings and fish demons and I'm trying to think of the weirdest thing I've seen so far.
Because I know it looks like it has a crazy sense of humor to it as well.
It does. Yeah, it does. There are all kinds of little pop culture references and things in there. Some of the different loading screens have different quotes from different popular items. I showed you one earlier this week. I can't remember what I said it was from. I think Rick and Morty.
Yeah, probably. I know you've been sending me a bunch of pictures on Facebook of like, look at this crazy thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to show you a little bit, but there's all kinds of weird stuff. Different grimoires you can get that shoot different things. You get missiles or lasers or bubbles. You collect different swords that also shoot different things. You could shoot fire, shoot more bullets. And they're idols that augment your abilities. So you get like the ability to heal yourself or scare enemies away or all kinds of other stuff.
Nice. I know it was originally developed for Steam. How well does it play on PlayStation?
Oh, amazingly well. I've had no issues with it at all. I'm sure the controls are exactly the same, whether you play with if you use a controller on Steam, then it would be the same. If you use a keyboard and mouse, then it's obviously going to be different. But
true.
It handles well. You really only need to use one side of the controller because it shoots for you. It's an auto shooter.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you don't have to hold down a button for that. So that's really good. There's a button to dash. It's either like square or L1. You can move around with the D-pad or the analog stick.
Now, does it shoot in the direction you're facing, or is it twin stick control?
No, it shoots in the direction that you're facing.
Okay.
No, I take that back. It homes in. The bullets home in. So it will shoot at whatever enemies come around you. So if you don't get close to anything, it's not going to shoot. If you do, it'll start shooting. But there is a button you can hold down to stop it from firing. Haven't figured out which button that is. but it's necessary for something later in the game. Because you're not supposed to shoot a certain enemy.
Interesting. Or something to happen. That's a really cool twist. I didn't know that it was an auto shooter and that the bullets would home in on enemies. That's really neat.
Yeah, no, it is. I was not expecting it when I got into it. And I was like, this makes bullet hell much easier. it's much less taxing when you have to worry about what button you're pressing or which enemy you have to face or trying to actually aim at the enemies.
So it lets you focus on dodging the bullets.
Yes. Yeah. So and if you have a...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you have a hard time dodging the bullets, like if you can't see them very well, there's also a high contrast option.
Oh, nice. Changes
the bullets for you. So that's what I did. I couldn't handle the neon bullets. So it's like dark purples and whites.
That's really cool. It's
nice, clear, noticeable bullets.
That's cool as hell. Holy shit.
It is.
So I know this game is going to get a lot of comparisons to Enter the Gungeon. What sets this one apart?
The setting, first of all. I mean, Enter the Gungeon is, it's all guns. I mean, guns and bullets, which is cool. The art style is pixelated, but it's unique. The music is a lot different. I love the soundtrack in this game. It's kind of this chill ambient. It doesn't get too tense at moments, except when you're fighting bosses. There's just a whole different aesthetic to it from Enter the Gungeon. It's a similar game, yes, but it's not. It doesn't give you the same feeling. At least that's what I feel. I mean, the influences are a lot different too.
Yeah.
Enter the Gungeon's got, you know. I mean, they've got skeletons and skeleton bullets and things like that, but it's. This is Lovecraftian horror. Enter the Gungeon is more tongue-in-cheek, funny stuff, killing the past. I haven't even gotten that far yet. I've never killed myself in the past.
Yeah, that's insane.
It is.
But overall, with this one, for $15, what are your thoughts on it?
$15? I thought it was $10.
Nope.
I could have sworn that it was cheaper.
Yeah, I could double check.
Whatever the case, buy it. That's my thought on it. It's a fun little romp. There's plenty to do, plenty to explore. You're going to be cutting your teeth against it for a while.
I do want to double check on the price, though, because my notes say 15. I know it is also 15 on Steam, although it is on sale on Steam for $10. So I wonder if it's on sale on PlayStation as well. Death State. No, it is $9.99. It is $10 on PlayStation 4. So
there you go.
Correction. Death State for $10. What do you think?
$10. That's $5 cheaper than anticipated. I would say that's $5 you could use to go get some soda.
Oh, I hate when my notes are wrong. Son of a bitch.
Oh, it's okay, Joe. You know, we're all human, but we fixed it. You know, it's cheaper now. Everybody else is cheaper now. And they can have a lot of fun for $10.
Hopefully people listen to the end of the review and don't just hear the beginning where I say in the notes that it's $14.99. Because it's, $14.99 on Steam. So I'm guessing that's where I got my information from. They also have the soundtrack available on Steam for $4.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, it's a good soundtrack, too. So I highly recommend it.
So whether it's $15 on Steam or $10 on PlayStation, sounds like it's a buy it.
It is a buy it. In my opinion, I'm going to be playing it some more, probably a little later today, try to get past that third dungeon.
Nice. I hope it makes the jump to Xbox soon, because if it doesn't, I'm probably just going to buy it on PlayStation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, PlayStation or Steam. Yeah, it's good. I recommend it. You should play it, Joe. I think it's only single player, though. So you don't get to enjoy it with your friends, but you can show them.
True. And fuck them. Okay. It's all about you.
That's right. That's right. Fuck your friends. Who needs them?
I don't need them. I don't need... Fuck you. Fuck you, Ian.
Well, fuck you, Joe. Shout me on the show and then to insult me.
Of course. You've been on the show before. You know how it works. I insult everybody. Myself the most.
Well, nothing wrong with a little self-deprecating humor.
Exactly. So, Ian, it's been fantastic having you back on the show. You got to come back more than like once a year.
Yeah, no, definitely. Anytime you need somebody on, I'm here.
So, sounds good. Do you have any final words to end your review?
You know, be careful going into that abyss because it could swallow you and you'll come out as an eldritch abomination.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Silver Case, developed by Grasshopper Manufacture, published by NIS America, released April 18th on the PlayStation 4 for $29.99. Physical versions are available through the NIS America shop. A string of mysterious serial killings plagues the city. The detectives of the 24 Ward's Heinous Crimes Unit have their eyes on one man. Kamui Uehara?
Yeah, Uehara.
Okay. Great start. Legendary serial killer and assassin of a number of government officials 20 years prior in the now famous Silver Case. However, nobody knows who or what he really is. Has he really returned? Who is this infamous serial killer? I'm sure you already heard his voice, but Tim Ekibis is back on the show to talk about this one. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great.
So you know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like while I played this and I've also been in the thick of playing Persona 5. So like Japanese names and pronunciations are flying about in my current media consumption.
Nice. I love when I read these and I don't like read them ahead of time and these names pop up.
Like, uh-oh, I did that thing again. Shit. I didn't read it.
It has multiple syllables. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, so, you know, while this game was recently released on the PS4, it came out on PC last year, but it was first released on the PlayStation 1 in the year 1999.
Oh, my God. I graduated high school that year.
Me too. Yeah, so this is originally a PS1 game. This was most of us, well, actually all of us here in the U.S. were introduced to Suda by way of Killer 7 for the GameCube /PS2, if you were one of the five people that bought that game. Or No More Heroes was probably that, but those are the first things that came over. So like for a long time, like his older games, Flower, Sun, and Rain, and the Silver Case were kind of these lost white whales that Suda fans kind of lusted after if they couldn't read Japanese. We got Flower, Sun, and Rain on the DS. They're working on the Silver Case for the DS, and I guess they finished it, but they decided it wasn't good enough to put out, so they didn't. I was reading some backstory about this. So anyways, but no, finally, yes, here in 2016, 2017, we finally get the Silver Case to play, 18 years after it originally released for the PS1. And boy, does it show that it is an old game.
What is the game? Let's start off easy. What is the game?
It's an adventure game, more or less. Yeah, it's a kind of a first person adventure game. There's some puzzles. There's a lot of dialogue. It's a very, very text heavy game. Played from the when you are playing, it's from the first person perspective. But you know, the cinematics can be whatever, all over the place. One of the things. You probably if you're going to check this game out, you probably shouldn't do it on the PS4 because like the way the game is displayed, like kind of all the action and cinematics take place inside of like a little window that takes up maybe like a third of the screen total. It's kind of like in the top half, but the rest of it is like there's like this background, and then you'll get like the character portraits that pop up from the bottom and all the dialogue and such. But the actual, you know, what you're looking at in the environment is actually pretty small if you're playing on a big TV in your living room and your couch is substantially enough away from it, which is the case with me. But I think it would be a much better experience played on a computer with like a monitor right there in front of you, just to be able to read everything and see the detail in the environment such as it is. And initially I thought that might have been a conceit of the remaster. Like they did a thing where they made it look small so it looked sharper, but no, that's actually how it was back in the original version for the PlayStation 1.
Oh wow.
Back in the day. Yeah, it probably wasn't as much of a thing back then because it was a CRT, just smaller, just display ratios, whatever.
We were actually talking about this on one of the recent interviews I did of like back in the day. Like on tube TVs, we used to think that like 27-inch TVs were massive.
Oh yeah,
well yeah, because like, they did weigh like 90 pounds.
Yes, they are massive in their own way.
And now like a 65-inch flat screen feels small.
Yeah, my flat screen is 42-inch, and it felt bigger at the time because
I wouldn't know what to do with it at that small.
It's not as small. Can you imagine
like playing split screen on those? Like when we were young, a 24-inch TV with like 4-player split screen, that was nothing.
Yeah, that was normal. That was fine.
And now you could go to like fucking Cowboy Stadium and play Mario Kart there, and it's still too small for you.
Yeah.
Like stop eating up my screen real estate.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah, just the evolution of HUDs and resolutions and such. But yeah, the game looks like a game that's 20 years ago. It's, you know, pretty simple polygons, and, you know, the portraits are mostly, sprite-based. The environments are pretty simple. Playing this game is a fucking pain in the ass. Holy shit. So, like, the way you control it, you know, once you are given control to do things, is there's a dial, and you know, you don't have direct control over your movement unless you first select movement from the dial. And there's four different things you can do. There's like investigate, use your items, save or consult something, or move. but it's not like, you know, you see the little icons over there on the right, and it's not like you like push a button to do one of them or use like a cross pad. You have to rotate the dial so the thing you want to do is at the top, and then you push a press a confirm button, and then you can do it. It's really clunky. It drove me nuts. Like, as soon as I started playing,
they would have updated some of it for, you know,
yes,
modern audiences.
Yes, one would think that they would have looked at that and said, we can do better than this right now. But man, it was just like, woof, so weird. And like in the first room where, you know, they're kind of teaching you what you can do, I couldn't quite figure out how to interact with something, because you have to like look at it and then not push the button that I thought that I had to look at it and then like rotate to one of the inspect things and then push another button. But what I didn't realize is when you're looking at it, it brings up another option, which is really hard to see in this other little menu that pops up that you can use to consult like your other two police officers that you're with. It took me a while to notice that. So I'm like trying to figure out what to do. And the one officer you're with is an asshole and treats you like shit. And so like whenever I'm screwing up, he's like, what are you doing, idiot? You got to do this. What the hell is wrong with you? And I'm just like, oh my God. Oh my God. I hate you right now, Silvercase. This is just like at the very beginning. This is like first impressions. And I'm just like, oh geez, come on.
Oh geez, Rick.
But yeah, eventually I sort it, but it's just like, it's not very intuitive controls. For this day and age, they should have done away with that dial thing. Like, I mean, just put the movement on the D-pad. Just, you know, you use your R1 and L1 to like look up and down, which is fine. But maybe they just wanted to make it like as exact to the PlayStation 1 experience as they could.
No,
but I mean, that's what I assume, because I can't think of any other reason why you would have it like that.
Looking at old original PS1 screens, it looks fairly the same, like comparing the PS4 screens to the PlayStation 1, clearly with, you know, better resolution and widescreen support and stuff like that. But it looks like they tried to stay faithful to it instead of dicking with the formula too much.
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess if they messed with it too much, there'd be purists out there saying that they ruined the game.
Yeah, so exactly. Like this, the reason this, you know, kind of came out or it exists at all is for hardcore Suda fans to see his first game, yeah, basically, because really no one else should check this out at all. Like there is a story there. That has its interesting moments. It's not as engaging as some of his other stuff. Certainly not Killer 7 or No More Heroes, in my opinion. But, you know, there's some definitely interesting twists and turns and themes and scenes that's just like, oh my God. But then there's just a lot of kind of wordy BS in the middle to slog through. And a lot of times when you just don't play very much for long stretches of time, like it almost borders on just being a straight up visual novel at times. Yeah, it's you know, it is what it is. Like it's here for Suda fans to finally check out his first game and see where he got his start.
Clearly this is a tough one to rate, because for most modern audiences, this sounds like something that's just going to be incredibly difficult for a casual gamer to get into and enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely not. Like, but much more
Suda
accessible.
Fans, like fans, yes, of Suda and his general insanity, it seems like it's something that really shouldn't be missed.
Right, yeah. No, exactly. Like, if you are a Suda fan, longtime Suda fan, absolutely, you're going to want to check it out. You probably have already checked it out. I probably don't need to tell you to, because you have.
You probably imported the PlayStation 1 version.
Maybe, yeah, but you pounced on the PC version or picked up, probably pounced on the PC version. I'm sure this doesn't take a beefy PC to run. Yeah, if you're like anyone else, there's so many more interesting and better adventure games out there, I think, to check out. in this day and age with, you know, what Telltale's been doing, you know, pick your favorite theme for a series. Sure. But, you know, there's Thimbleweed Park and just all kinds of other stuff. There's plenty of adventure games out there that are probably a bit easier to comprehend and certainly a hell of a lot easier to play. Like, oh my God, Full Throttle just came out. Tons of stuff though. This, that's kind of my thoughts on the Silver Case. Like, it's really for the hardcore Suda 51 fans only and no one else.
which makes sense. I mean, they had to know that there's a very niche audience that would want this game.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is hilarious looking at the Steam page, it's like, you, Whis, and Zerum all want this game on Steam.
Yeah, it's on my wish list.
So I know who that now. Audience is.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you were talking to Whis and Matt right now, what would you say to them?
There's probably other games they should play first. I mean, certainly Whis, I know for a fact, does not have a lot of time to play games. I certainly Zerum, I think, would have time to check it out. Like, if they have time, it's just because I know Whis doesn't have time that I wouldn't recommend it to him. But yeah, no, there's other people I know that are Suda fans. I'd be like, no, of course you have to check it out. Like, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know.
Yeah.
It's more of an academic interest than like, this game's going to blow your mind. Like, Flower, Sun, and Rain is boring. It's a boring game, but it's hilarious because it's so intentionally boring. But like, you can't. I had an argument with a friend of mine when that game came out. He's just like, you know, if they just took, there's literally stages in that game, in Flower, Sun, and Rain, where you have to run for like 5-10 minutes to the other side of the map, only for the guy to tell you, hey, go back. And then you go back, and then you have to go back, and then you go back again, and then that's the stage.
And oh my God.
It's just to be stupid and annoying. And I think that's hilarious eventually. You know, I mean, I get it. But, you know, my friend's like, you know, if they cut out all that running and made it so you could fast travel, it would be so much easier to enjoy the game. But I'm like, that takes away so much of the point. Like, the game is intentionally trolling you and messing with you in this character.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, Killer 7, that's a game with weird controls. No More Heroes is a game with weird controls. Sort of.
are you excited about the possibility of No More Heroes returning on the Switch?
I am whether it's No More Heroes or not, they've said it's Suda directing a game again, which he's only directed those four games that, you know, I've mentioned here. He's produced a lot of games. He's produced tons of games over the course of the past 10 years or so since No More Heroes, but he has not directed anything. So they haven't, nothing that's had his name kind of attached to it has scratched the itch the same way that like Killer 7, No More Heroes, Flower, Sun, and Rain, to a lesser extent, Silver Case did. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Big reason why I bought a Switch.
Did you get Mario Kart yet?
I did not. I got Puyo Puyo this week.
Nice. So
I'm playing Puyo Puyo. I just like, it's tough just because, you know, I bought Mario Kart 8 on the Wii U. So just buying it again, I'm just like, I'll wait a little bit.
See, I thought the same thing, and then I remembered that it's fucking Mario Kart.
It's really good. It's a really, really good Mario Kart game.
And they basically fixed the only glaring issue with the first game with battle mode.
Yep. Yeah. They absolutely did. So at some point, probably when I'm thirsty for a Switch game again in a couple months, I'll probably pick it up. I got Puyo Puyo tied me over for the moment.
Oh man. Well, it sounds good. Silver Case sounds like, if you're a Suda fan, it's definitely something you've got to experience, but for the casual audience, it's probably something you don't have to pay attention to.
Yeah, probably not. Definitely not. Yeah.
Well, sounds good.
Sorry,
Tim, do you have any final words to sum things up and to end your review?
Not really. No.
Next game to talk about is called Plutobi, the Dwarf Planet Tales, developed and published by Zynus. You might remember them from the Dreamals game. It released April 4th on PS4 for $14.99. Plutobi, the nickname of Pluto, was kicked out of the planet list in 2006 and became a dwarf planet because he is so small and weak. So he decided to become planet again by showing his power to the other planets in the solar system, absorb many asteroids and become stronger, also defeat about 60 planets, moons, and mega asteroids to show his power. We got our friend Chris Taylor on this one. Chris, how are you doing today?
Hey, doing great.
How is it playing the dwarf planet?
Oh, it's good. Okay, so basically, this might be the most difficult game you've thrown my way so far. I had to get an extra week just to like see if I could make more progress in it, and I didn't make too much more, but I got pretty okay at it.
Yeah, I know. I know Zynus, their previous games, the Dreamals titles, they got tough quick.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, yeah, basically Plutobi is a game that just like they really took a concept and just like threw everything in the kitchen sink at it, you know? Okay, so yeah, the way the game goes is that you are the dwarf planet Pluto, which was indeed ceremoniously kicked off the list of planets in 2006 as a dwarf planet. Because they figured out that, well, this thing called Eris that's circling Neptune or whatever is like 27% bigger than Pluto. So why does Pluto get to be a planet and this doesn't? So there's more than one dwarf planet in our system, solar system, apparently. That's what Wikipedia tells me anyway. So yeah, Pluto got like, you know, got knocked off. It had a nice 76-year run as a planet. But Pluto is a plucky little, you know, spinning ball of rock, so it decides to show all the planets what for, I suppose, by destroying all of them or something. I mean, they certainly look destroyed.
Pluto is pissed, and he's coming for you.
Pretty much. And also, that includes the sun. So,
oh, my God.
I'm not exactly sure what Pluto's end game is here.
So how does the game play? Like, I don't really understand what kind of game it is.
I know, it's crazy if you look at it, but thankfully the game has a very thorough tutorial that you can access pretty much anytime, and so all the stuff gets explained to you pretty well. So what you do is, you don't control Plutobi directly, you control a little, a kind of cursor that it follows. So I guess you control like the gravitational pull of Plutobi, I suppose. It's just a little circle, but anyway, you control it with the stick, and Plutobi follows it anywhere. And the further away you get from Plutobi, the faster it'll chase after it. So it's basically like dragging around us a heavy thing with a rubber band, you know?
Yeah.
So it's got the rubber band type of physics there. And so you go through the different levels, and in the levels, there are these, they look like black holes, but kind of in reverse. So, I don't know, black explosions? Whatever. Either way, celestial things of some type that distribute these little, I guess they kind of look like icons. There are four different icons, and each one corresponds to an element. So the whole point of getting Plutobi to go from too weak to even be allowed to be a planet to being strong enough to destroy the frickin' sun is by way of basically acquiring mass. And the way you acquire mass is that you have to absorb these elemental things. So that's where the face buttons come into play. So on the face button, you've got your I have to look at a PlayStation controller for reference here. So you've got your triangle, circle, cross, and square. And you push one in order to change your elemental affinity so that you will absorb the thing that's coming at you, or else you'll take damage. But in fact, so you got water, fire, metal, and soil corresponding to each of the buttons. So let's say that something is fire. It's the red icon, and it's coming at you. So you push the triangle button, which makes you become a fire elemental. And this happens instantly. It's pretty quick. I actually wouldn't say instantaneous. There's like a little microsecond delay. But you push the button to become a fire elemental. And so when the thing hits your planet, then you absorb it and you get, I don't know, like 30 points or whatever. It'll tell you it tells you a scale in the tutorial of how good everything is. So you absorb something, you get like a good rating, which is like in the middle, but you gain your elemental. Now, let's say there's actually a Final Fantasy style elemental opposite thing going on too. So let's say a fire thing is heading your way and you change your affinity to water by pushing the square button, which is the next one over on the circle. So the square to become water. So the water will actually counteract the fire and you'll get an even bigger amount of mass. And so to the opposite. So it operates in a circle like that. So fire is fire is the best against metal. Metal is the best against soil. Soil is the best against water. Water is the best against fire. So keeping that in mind, like as you're going through these tunnels, controlling Plutobi with a rubber band, so too are you having to analyze everything that's being thrown at you, which, by the way, becomes a ton of stuff. And you have to figure out what element is going to make you absorb them rather than take damage. And so the good thing is when you acquire mass, it's calculated in levels. So you gain levels and you gain more hit points and all this other stuff. So it takes way longer to kill you if you start messing up. But I gained like tons of levels and still like had so much trouble with the first boss even. And that wasn't even the planet. It was, what was it even called? I forget. It was like Laverne or something. I don't know. But it was something I had to defeat, before I could even see like the planet Mercury, which is the first planet. And so it's like going through four or five different levels, each one with its own kind of, not unique, but a kind of rotating list of requirements. So the first two levels, I had to gain two levels in each stage, regardless of how many levels I gained in the previous stage, in order to proceed. And then I had to collect all these icons that were scattered across the level for each of the sign of the zodiac to open up the exit. And then I had to beat a mini boss and all this other stuff. And so it was really involved, and I was like, wow, okay, so I guess, I'm going to be really powerful and go defeat Mercury and stuff. Then they send this little sub-boss after me who, like, completely cleans my clock because I just didn't know how to beat it at first. And then that sent me all the way back to the beginning in level one. So the game was, I felt like it was really unforgiving at that point. But apparently once you clear the sub-bosses, then it starts letting you continue your progress. But every time you start another series of sub-stages, it's from level one. So you really have to, like, each one, you have to build up all this power and stuff and actually make it through basically in one shot in order to proceed. So in that sense, it's a mega hard game.
Damn.
Yeah. So
it's pretty crazy.
It is crazy, and actually, for that reason, I think that it's appealing to people who really enjoy things that are, that are unique like that. It's basically you're playing kind of like a Simon Says mixed with Opposite Day on your one hand. On the other hand, you're playing like, Asteroids or something like or some rubber band physics like video game, and then in the back of all that, you're keeping the objectives in mind and then trying not to die. the other thing, you can somewhat heal yourself with random asteroids that just fly through the levels if you pick them up with the cursor and then send them to your planet. I don't really know what that does. I guess it crunches them up and adds them to the planets, I don't, craters. I don't know. It's hard to really pick apart the metaphor sometimes.
It seems like an overall crazy game.
It is crazy. If you're going to get into this game, it's very pretty. The soundtrack is phenomenal. It's got a very awesome, spacey, techno-heavy, like, electronic soundtrack, which I hear in a lot of, like, well-made modern indie games. It's kind of that level. Plus, they've already got the soundtrack pretty much on YouTube, so that's really good.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, just be prepared for a long learning curve.
Nice. So for $15, what are your thoughts on it?
For $15, I would say research it and figure out if it's the game for you. And then I would say go for it, because there is so much content in this state, in this level. Like, it took me a week of playing a couple of sessions, you know, like you would do on an indie game. You know, a couple sessions a day for a week to get, like, as far as I did. And there's, like, easily 30 times that much content. So,
good Lord.
This is a game that will keep you as busy as a full game would. So, it's a bargain in that sense. People who are looking for just a casual, like, they see it, it looks kind of puzzly or kind of action-y, and they're like, oh, okay, that'll while away a couple of hours, then, yeah, stay away, because you're going to get very frustrated very quickly.
Not for the casuals.
No, this one's a hardcore. It looks like a casual, but this is for the hard ones.
Nice.
But overall, I really like this game because I've never seen anything approach this way in gameplay. Like, I've never seen gameplay quite done this way. So in that sense, it's like, even though it was hard and frustrating, I was still compelled to keep trying, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good game. Just make sure you know what you're getting into.
All right. Sounds good, Chris. Do you have any final words to end this?
No, not really. I guess I got to see if I can beat up Mercury at some point.
Do you want to pimp out your Twitch channel like you usually do?
Yeah, totally. You can catch me on Twitch. Liar Exaggerate is my handle on there. I play classic games. Right now I'm trying to beat 50 16-bit games in 2017. Just cleared number 25, so that's pretty fun. So I'm halfway there.
Next game to talk about is called Deformers, developed by Ready at Dawn, published by Game Trust, a.k.a. GameStop. It released April 21st on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $29.99, or you could get yourself a nice fancy physical edition with a steelbook and some Deformer figures for $39.99. Yeah, prices. Prepare for an epic battle. Deformers is a physics-based arena brawler where the goal is to out-battle, out-eat, and outscore your opponent. Smash up your friends in split-screen co-op or team up and fight against others online. We have our friend Cole Martin covering this one. So, Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Thank you.
What'd you think of Deformers?
It's fun. It is. It's like mindless good fun. It's brightly colored.
It's adorable as fuck.
It's adorable. And the you can't even have chickens. You can have a chicken deformer.
I'm trying to save up my Helix credits, whatever the fuck they are, to get the kitty.
Yeah.
Because that one's not like surprising. 15. That
one costs like 15. Chicken is 10. And I think I was at 9, and I almost have the chicken, and I'll be happy. I was a little sad there's no goat, so that's why I had to, like, there's a chicken and a duck, though, but there's no goat. I got robbed. Maybe they'll make a goat DLC.
That'd be cool.
And have a goat. Yeah, I'd be on board for that. But it is a little limited. It's fun.
So what is Deformers? For the people who don't know what it is, what is it?
Deformers has three modes, and two of them are a deathmatch. One is a free-for-all style deathmatch, another is a team deathmatch. And the third is like Rocket League with blobs instead of cars. It's kind of the best way to go about describing it. Ideally, you want to knock off, if you're playing free-for-all, you want to knock off all the other blobs from your little rock that's in the middle of the map. There's the arena type is like a floating island, kind of. And the whole goal is to destroy everybody else by either blowing them up and hitting them until their health is so low that they pop, or knocking them off the map. Then, of course, in the Rocket League, you know, type of play, you've got the goals on each side, and the goal is to get the ball using your blob with your team's help into the other team's goal.
I'll be honest, I haven't messed with that mode at all. It just, I figure if I want to play something like that, I would just play Rocket League.
Yeah, it was okay. I could see my kids enjoying it more, where I was like, yeah, I just play Rocket League. But the kids were able to set it up in a custom game and, you know, split screen with two controllers and just tear into it. And I didn't have to worry about them, you know, not being able to maneuver driving a car, because it's a lot easier to just roll the blobs wherever you want them to go.
Yeah.
There was no, you know, there's not like the, oh, I need to learn a brake and I need to learn how to use the emergency brake to turn on a dime like with Rocket League.
And do like the rocket more, flipping and boosting in the
air.
Yeah,
and the flying and all that. This is much more accessible for small kids. And so it's really ideal for that. The whole game itself kind of draws more to the younger crowd. And that's not a bad thing at all. It does it very well. It makes it, the whole play is accessible for kids. Like, you can hand it to your kids, walk away, and you know they're going to be all right. You might have to stop them from trying to bump their sisters off of a rock next week because they learned a bad habit. But at least as far as the game goes, it's accessible. They can learn it easily.
Let's talk about the main mode then, because we could focus on the Rocket League stuff, but it's a more casual friendly Rocket League. I think the meat and potatoes of this game, or the pancake stack, depending on which character you pick, which I've picked the pancake like almost every time because it's hilarious, is the running each other off the map, or the deathmatch modes.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really where it shines and kind of stands on its own. And it's not hard to play. The controls are really responsive. It could benefit from maybe a little more instruction as to, oh, if you press RB, it does this, or if you press LB, it does that.
It would benefit from a tutorial in any way whatsoever, because there is zero direction when you start playing.
Yeah, it just throws you in. And I spent a good couple of matches just getting fucked, because I didn't know where I was going, what I was doing. Not in the enjoyable kind of way either. Like in the way where they did it without your consent and not enough lube.
Oh, God.
So, you know.
How is it when you're on, things always turn like grotesquely sexual?
It's an accident.
Oh, good Lord. A lot of people seem to be like confused on how the game is played, and the best way I've been able to describe it is a mix between like an online free-for-all brawler and bumper balls from Mario Party 1.
Now, see, I've never played anything like that. That's always my downfall. I don't have like the old style games. Like, I played the original Nintendos and that was it. And then I didn't play anything again until I started playing Xbox. See, so I don't have the glory of being like, oh, this is like Mario something or other, because I didn't play that shit.
Well, a lot of people haven't had the privilege to play Mario Party 1 because it's never been re-released, and mainly because there were mini games in there that involved rotating the analog stick. And on the N64, they just had the one in the middle. So what people would do is use their palm and just rotate it really fast, except they would like burn their palm.
Oh yeah.
And scar it to the point where Nintendo was like mailing people gloves to wear while playing. So they've never re-released it because of those mini games, which is a shame, because like some of the best mini games are on there, including bumper balls, which is just each of your characters standing on a large ball on a circular platform, and you just bump into each other to knock everyone else off the map. And when I saw Deformers, that was my first thought of like, oh my God, this is like online bumper balls, but it adds like power-ups. It adds shooting, which is a fun little twist. It adds like charging up
and do that though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not everybody gets to shoot, which is sad. Yeah. And I'm a little sad that like the pancake didn't shoot butter. I feel like that was a missed opportunity.
That'd be funny as shit.
That would be funny as shit. Or like maybe the cat should shoot hairballs or something. That would be awesome. Then I wouldn't sit here and say that I'm a little worried about the prize. I'd feel so much better. And I do want to say that we don't get enough idea at Xbox games that are online.
True.
Not nearly enough. And so I have the utmost respect for this one because it is online. You do have, you know, multiplayer. The whole thing is multiplayer. You can play custom by yourself. You're going to get bored.
Yeah.
you want to go beat up on people. And it's fun. And I didn't have any issues with lag or anything like that the whole time that I played. So definitely two thumbs up in that department. I think I cut you off, didn't I?
I was just going to say, I think the one thing that needs to be addressed with this is the biggest gripe everybody has is the price.
Yeah.
And I have to wholeheartedly agree that $30 for this game, it just seems
it's
out of reach
much.
For most people. Most people aren't going to give it a try for $30. I think GameStop realized that. And when the game launched, I don't believe they're still doing it. But when the game launched, pro members could get the game for 50% off.
See, it should have been 50% off to start with.
I honestly agree.
It would be so much more. So, like, I could see parents browsing through the store, see this and go, oh, my kid might like that. And then be like, oh, $30. I'm not paying just $30 for something just my kid's going to play.
And then there's some assholes out there who are like, oh, I wouldn't pay more than $10 for this. Well, then fuck you. Well, you're not going to get the game anyway. That's just completely unrealistic.
But I don't think 15 would have been out of range for it. I think 15 would have been fine. Maybe, but I don't know. 30 is too much. But anyway, it could also benefit from a few extra maps. It only has, I think, maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So they wanted to go in and add a few extra maps, I'd feel better about that too. And I don't think
it's possible that could be something that's added down the line. That could be either I would hope it would be free DLC because it seems like they have microtransactions in place to unlock shit earlier. So hopefully they're just going to look at adding maps for free. But I'm worried that not enough people are going to get this game to even warrant it.
To justify the maps. That's what I thought, too. I was like, because it's the prices is so out of reach of so many people, they're going to pass it by. I think its saving grace would be if maybe there was a big ass sale and it got caught up on that.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh, it's only $10, $5 or whatever, then get it. Like, if it were cheaper, I'd be looking at my friends and going, hey, y'all need to come play this with me.
See, when it launched, I was telling everyone I could, hey, if you're a pro member at GameStop, you could get the game for half price. You could get the game for $15, which I thought is a perfect price for the game. Even $20, I think, is a reasonable price for the game because it's well made. It looks great. It's animated well. The character designs are fantastic. It doesn't feel like there's enough there to justify the $30 price.
Yeah. If there was just a little more meat to its meat and potatoes.
If they had some kind of actual single player anything to it.
Oh goodness, that would make a big difference. And I don't even mind that, like, there's only 3 game modes. That's not even a problem because they're fine as they are. I don't need, I don't know, maybe a capture the flag type thing would be kind of fun with it too, to be fair. But it would need a bigger arena like the soccer version has. But I think there's potential for it to improve and have more content. But like you said, I'm worried that there's not going to be enough sales to justify that.
Yeah, I was talking about this before the game even came out, that I was worried that GameStop doesn't have any trust or faith in this game. because I mentioned, look at Song of the Deep, where, you know, I got a $60 statue for $6.
Yeah.
Because they're clearancing it out. They went all in with Song of the Deep, and I don't think it paid off for them. And then Has-Been Heroes came out, which was, Has-Been Heroes was supposed to be out after Deformers, and Deformers got delayed like 3 or 4 different times. They seem to go all in with Deformers as well, with the collector's edition and the little figurines. And then Has-Been Heroes was just standard $20 release. That's it. No collector edition, no swag, no nothing. Critics, for the most part, haven't been kind to any of the games. So I don't know if it's like a case of critics expecting too much out of indies from title or from developers who usually put out bigger titles, or could it be a case of the developers like kind of half-assing it, which I don't think so, because I loved Song of the Deep and I thought Has-Been Heroes was really solid as well.
Yeah. I didn't get to play Song of the Deep. I missed out on that one. Hoping to catch it on a sale at some point. It's in that pile of if I see it for $5.
Well, you could get it physical at GameStop for $10, I think.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But my Xbox kicks this out. Every time I say, there's a physical disc for cheap, and then I'm like, shit, but when I was playing Division, it was kicking my disc out all the time.
Why? So, like, what's causing it?
I have some kind of short in the eject button, and it just goes like the whole time. Now that I don't put discs in it anymore, because I just bought everything that I had on disc, I turned around and got it digital. Which wasn't hard. I had like 3 things. The Division was one of them. but like now that I haven't put a disc in it in like 4 or 5 months. I haven't heard it go dink anymore since. So I don't know if maybe it just dinked itself to death.
Maybe.
Or if, like, it's just waiting for me to go buy a game and put in there.
Now's the time to try it.
It'll go right back. Dink, 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 dink.
Get Song of the Deep for cheap and then give it a shot and see if it works.
Yeah, find out. Yeah. I might have to.
Where do you live again?
Redneckville.
I'm trying to look up and see if any GameStops around you have the collector edition.
Paintsville would be the closest to me. Paintsville, Kentucky.
Well, it looks like no one in that area has it. Damn.
That sounds right. They probably didn't get it initially anyway. It's one of those little like hole-in-the-wall stores. Smashed between a Subway and a nail salon.
See, those are the places that usually have the hard to find shit.
Yeah,
because they're just so tiny and out of the way that if they get one or two of an item in, no one will know about it, and they'll just sit there forever.
I will say, when I was looking for Eternal Sonata when I had a 360, they were the only place I found it. Like, I couldn't even find it online. And then one day we went in there to get, I think it was a Charge and Play pack. And I saw Eternal Sonata sitting there. And it was like $4. I freaked out. I need this game!
I hope that comes to Xbox One soon. But anyway, we're kind of getting off the rails with Deformers.
I did my thing, didn't I? I was going to say buy it. Try it! And you'll probably have fun, but maybe wait for a sale.
if you could find somehow a GameStop that's still doing like the promotional pricing or cutting deals, like trying to clear inventory or something on the physical version, if you could get it for $15-$20, I think it's definitely worth getting and playing, as long as it retains a player base, which is my biggest like the game is a week old as of now, not even.
Yeah.
And
I didn't have any trouble getting games last night, but tonight has not been as lucky. And when I was playing last night, it was a lot of little kids.
I was sitting in a team deathmatch queue for about 5 minutes, just waiting.
Yeah.
Because I entered and saw someone and left, and then I tried, you know, searching for something else, and I went back, and it was the same guy sitting there. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to sit with this dude and wait. The game ended up filling up a few minutes later, And then when the match started, my team left.
The whole team.
So it was four on one.
Yeah, that's not a good way to play a team-based game.
I will say that if Ready at Dawn is looking at actively supporting and updating the game, they need to do something for shit like that of, like, put bots in.
Yeah.
Because me against four people was not fun at all.
Don't lie. You loved being chased around the map.
God, that everybody sucks wanted so some bad.
Pancake.
Everybody but want my pancakes.
I at least at this point I say give it a try, because it is fun. It's well done. I didn't have any problems with lag or anything. Could be because there's not a lot of people.
Yeah, I just but my biggest concern is whether or not people are going to play this.
If it could retain a player base, if it could grow, if they made a few extras, then it would do really well. But for right now, it's testing the waters a little.
It's kind of like a patience game, and see if Ready at Dawn and Game Trust are going to stand behind the game and keep supporting it. Because if they give up, there's no reason for us to stick with it.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I'm always right.
No, your name's not Eternal.
No, that's you. And speaking of, thank you as always for joining and taking care of this game for us. It was good chatting about the game with you. Do you have any final words to sum up the review?
Please don't let us down, developers. We'd like to see this game grow.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is called Little Nightmares, developed by Tarsier Studios, published by Bandai Namco, released April 27th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $19.99. Immerse yourself in Little Nightmares, a dark, whimsical tale that will confront you with your childhood fears. Help Six escape the Maw, a vast, mysterious vessel inhabited by corrupted souls looking for their next meal. We have someone new joining us for a review, Tom Miller. Tom, how are you doing today? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Fresh blood. We get to corrupt someone new.
Aha. Oh, boy.
And you're starting off big with a Bandai Namco title, so welcome to the show. Yeah. What did you think of Little Nightmares?
I really enjoyed it. I actually just finished it up this afternoon. It is a bit on the short side, and that's kind of the complaint that a lot of people have. It's only like a 3 hour or so game, but I loved it personally. I grew up with stuff like Out of This World or Another World, and like just immediately I was getting those same vibes of just being in an unfamiliar place and having to, you know, get your way around different obstacles and figure out how to get through different situations. And it just had like that really tense and I don't know, it had a vibe to it. There are other games like Limbo and Inside that have come out recently that have sort of a similar vibe to them, but this has like almost a grotesquely cartoonish thing going on also that I thought was really cool.
Nice.
So I was a fan. Yeah.
So grotesquely cartoon, like how gross does the game get? It's what, T-rated?
Yeah. So yeah, it's T-rated. It's not like a very bloody. I mean, there are parts of the game with blood and like some sort of disturbing imagery going on, but
nothing too crazy.
Nothing too crazy, no. But like when I say grotesquely cartoonish, like all of the character designs in the game are just so like over the top, and it's just got like. You can tell that the art designers had a field day designing these things. But yet they somehow really have a lot of like humanity to them too. It's really cool. And even though the game is not that hard, you can pretty much hide from anything easily. But just like watching them move around the different environments and stuff, it's really. I don't know. It just has this weird charm to it that I just I loved it.
I enjoy the visuals. It has kind of like a claymation-esque look to it.
Yeah.
Of like hyper-realistic but still animated.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it has, it really does juxtapose those styles, because like, because the characters are so over the top and weird, but then you're in like, you know, and then you're like, you're clambering up like this file cabinet and they're like, you know, paperwork is flying around and stuff, and it's just like the most mundane things. But, and it's stuff like, there are just some really cool like cinematography moments too, like the way the camera kind of moves around and focuses on different things. It really like, it just pulls you into it. And actually, well, like there were a couple times when that kind of like was a bit of a problem, because like the cinematic aspect of it does kind of like clash with trying to move along precisely. And, you know, especially toward the end of the game, there's a part toward the end of the game, and I won't spoil it, but you're walking along a narrow ledge for a long time and the camera's panning along with you, and you, like, I fell off 3 times and I felt like it wasn't my fault, and that kind of thing always gets to me. But
the camera angle messing you up or something.
Yeah. But I mean, that kind of thing for any 3D game, like it's, that is like the number one difficulty, I think, just to get that kind of thing right.
Cameras. How do they work? Yes,
cameras. Cameras are the devil.
We had a Clayton of Beep Games talking about Voodoo Vince the other week, and that was something that came up. Like, how is it so hard to get a camera working in 3D games anymore?
Yeah.
Just crazy, crazy.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it was always, I think we probably gave a lot of stuff a pass when we were kids that we probably wouldn't stand for now.
Yeah.
Like, replaying stuff like Super Mario 64 or whatever, and, like, you're walking along a ledge and all of a sudden the camera's just like, it's just like, how did I ever think that was okay?
Oh, but, God, and let's not forget Mario 64. You didn't even have dual analog stick controls. You had 4 friggin' buttons.
Yeah, right.
So, good Lord. So, how does the game play? Is it just like a stealth kind of game, or is it like action oriented?
Yeah, it's, well, there's barely any action except for when you're running away from things, but it is far more a stealth game, and you know, just kind of trying to figure out how all the different people on the ship where the game takes place react to you, and what kind of things will tip them off, and just kind of trying to sneak your way through the different sections of it. And then a lot of it is just, there's a lot of just flavor areas to it where, you know, you don't really see much of anything, but you, you're just going through these areas. And, like, even empty areas in this game, like, I've heard complaints about it, but I just, the atmosphere is so like oppressive, and just like there are some shots where you're like walking up a staircase and you just have your lighter and you just see like the halo of light around you, and then that's all you can see, and it just has this really like lonely, and so it's more like an exploration and stealth combination is how I felt about it.
Gotcha. Is it scary? Like, are there jump scares in it, or is it just more of like a moody atmosphere?
There were a couple of jump scares, but it's far more about the atmosphere, which I like personally. I don't know. For me, that's both a lot more effective and a lot harder to pull off.
And then you have something like Outlast 2, where its only job is to scare the ever-loving shit out of you.
I haven't played that one, unfortunately, and I might not, but we'll see. I don't know. it's weird. I'm actually not usually that much of a fan of horror games, but I really enjoyed this one. So,
see, I'm a fan of watching horror games, but not playing them, because I'm what you would call scientifically a bitch. The original Outlast, my friend Kunal came over to visit, and we were joking around like, the winner is whoever shits their pants last.
That's a sign of a quality horror title, I gotta say.
So it's good to know that Little Nightmares is just more of a moody atmosphere game and not something that's going to literally give you nightmares forever.
Yeah, I don't think much pants shitting is going to happen among the Little Nightmares playing crowd, but, you know, they might step into a room and just be like, wow, this is creepy.
I love the visuals to it, though. Like, the screenshots that I've been seeing of, like, the giant arms crawling after you, and...
Yeah. And actually, I was recording... I've been doing a little bit of YouTube stuff lately, but I remember the first time you see that guy, and it's just in a dark room, you just see his silhouette come out, and just, like, these massive arms and, like, a little stubby body, and it's just like, what the hell is going on? It's, like, the first thing you ever really see in the game, so, yeah.
Oh, man. And any downsides you want to talk about with the game?
Yeah, I mean, a couple. Like, there are just, like I was mentioning, sometimes it's the controls are a little slippery, and they did cause a few deaths that I probably wouldn't have had otherwise, which can be a little frustrating. And the main thing that people will complain about is the length of the game, and it is really short. I beat it in, like, 2 afternoons, but, you know... I mean, for me, I'll take a short game that kind of, like, accomplishes what it sets out to do, as opposed to, like, you know, I felt like if it would have been all that much longer, it would have overstayed its welcome. But
that's exactly what I was thinking. I'd rather have a game that leaves me wanting more instead of thinking, yeah, this could have ended an hour ago.
Yeah. It could have probably had a little more to it. There are some really awesome, God, I don't want to say it because I don't want to spoil it, but the last couple areas of the game have, I just don't want to say it, but just, like, it's worth playing. I think for, like, the last hour of the game, I do think that, like, any downside that it had really was redeemed by, you know, the last few sequences. I was really impressed by both the cinematography and like, the general goings-on. It's pretty crazy.
Nice. So what are your thoughts for $20? What's your verdict on this?
What I would say is if you are a big fan of stuff like Out of This World or Limbo or Inside, it's probably worth it. If you're not, I'd recommend probably, or if you haven't played them, watch like a gameplay video, see if it's something you'd be into. I would buy it, but I know a lot of people who aren't really into this genre might want to skip it, or just, you know, maybe just give it a try or watch videos of it. I do think, for me, it would be worth it. I know a lot of people would disagree.
And I personally already have my 6th edition sitting on a shelf. I just haven't had time to get to play it yet, so I bought it. And I have my tiny little statue, my 6th statue, and
sweet.
The soundtrack, which leads me, we end our shows with music. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but for this episode, since we're ending the show with Little Nightmares, I'm just going to play some of the songs from the Little Nightmare soundtrack.
Sounds good to me. There were some good ones.
Do you have any preferences?
Like, the very last credits theme, and I don't know what it's called, but there's, like, this vocal track that repeats in a few different places. It's just, like, a really simple melody that has a vocal come in a little bit into it. I don't know what it's called, though, but it's so haunting, and I love it.
Well, I am going to find a way to get the soundtrack to you so you could pick a couple of songs and let me know what to play.
All right, sounds good.
Do you have any final words to sum up your review and to end the show?
Well, you know, I think we covered just about everything as far as the game goes, but I'm really happy to be here, and you know, I had a good time both playing the game and coming on here and talking to you. So thanks a lot.
We'll have to get you back on again sometime.
Right on. I'd love to.